Can you just give me an idea of a bit more about the farm itself? How many acres have you got?
It's 97 hectares, 250 acres or so.
Right. And that's
it's all steep hill land.
Right.
And we've got meadows. We used to mow about 20 acres of meadows, but now we've not got the cows, we don't mow as much. We make it mainly into hay. If the weather's bad, when we've mowed it, we do make it into big bales and wrap it, but they're mainly hay meadows. It's all permanent pasture. We've not ploughed them. Can you ever remember us ploughing anything?
No. No.
Yeah, and David's 30 now.
30-ish, yeah, yeah.
So there's nothing being ploughed here for 30 years. So, you know, the type of grass hasn't changed at all. We don't use fertiliser, that's too expensive. We just put one of these dumpy bags on one meadow to try and get some long grass if the weather comes at the beginning of June, because it's frustrating trying to make hay if the weather comes in the middle of June and the grass isn't long enough, and then when it gets to July, it rains for a month, you can't make hay.
But you found that you've managed that over the years.
Yes.
And been almost self-sufficient in terms of winter feed?
Definitely, yeah.
Well, that's unusual, isn't it? I mean, that is a great argument for keeping some hay meadows going. Isn't it fairly unusual still? You know,
no.
For not people bringing in more food?
No, most people round here make enough fodder for the winter.
How many sheep have you got? Have you got a large number? And what breeds?
We've been on mule ewes, and I've put the Suffolk Tup on them over the years, but now we're going more towards a Texel.
So the mules, is that Leicester Gritstone cross? That's
Swale.
Cross, right. Yeah. But you're going over to Texels?
Yeah, it's what the butchers say they want.
Big and chunky.
Yes, yeah.
Do they do all right on your...
Yeah.
Land. Mm. Are a lot of your lambs sold? Do they go as sort of live sales? Are they exported or is that
they
not
all, beyond? All go as to livestock markets.
Right.
So try and keep the markets going.
Yeah.
Even though at the end of March our local market, Chelford Market, closed.
Oh, I heard that, yeah.
That's a way of life gone. The next nearest market is Leek. That's about 20 miles, Bakewell's about 20 miles. Mm. After that, you've got Beeston, I hardly know my way there.
Mm.
Takes about 2 hours to get there. Mm. Shrewsbury, Oswestry, Market Drayton, Skipton.
But you stick
They're all 2.5-3 hour drives away.
But you stick with all the local ones, do you?
Yeah.
How big was Chelford? Did they do much business?
Why
did that close?
Well, they didn't own the site, most of the site, so it was going for building. Mm. They was making a profit, but it would go for development.
Mm.
And I can remember we used to go down to Northampton.
Oh, yeah.
It had a very old-fashioned market, and they built a brand-new state-of-the-art market.
Mm.
It was only open for 2 years. It was profitable. It was open for 2 years. But then the supermarket bought it to develop on it. Gave them about so many million for it.
Yeah.
Development.
Yeah. So... Let's sort of move on to sort of what kind of size of the farm. Is it the same size that you've got now that your dad bought in 1960?
No, we bought
three, was it?
Yes, we bought one or two extra little bits. Three small pieces when we could afford it. But there's been plenty of little parcels of land sold just a few years ago. But they make 150 grand. And you're going to make, you know,
so
maybe £1,000 a year profit off that. So it's not financially viable to buy it.
These are the really big issues, aren't they? Sort of distorted, strange value of land, sort of maybe going to entirely the wrong people. But
one of the issues.
Yeah. Okay, now let's hear about what's been going on in terms of land ownership and holdings. When did that pattern start happening round here?
Well, when my dad bought the Fawncett in 1963, he's the last farmer in Rayno that bought a farm. Since then, every small holding's been bought up by people from outside, business people, wealthy people, and they used to buy the small farms and sell the land off. Now they're coming back in, these what used to be farms. They're buying them and they're buying land back now. And then they can have land round them that they can control, make sure nobody builds on them or does anything they want, because they got the money. It's an investment.
So
and
what
the reason it's an investment is because they can get, they can say that they're the active farmer just because they say they are, and they've got this guaranteed money coming from the single farm payment, and that's just an investment for them.
But so you're saying really that this distorted ownership, which has been going on, as you say, right the 1960s.
Yes, yeah.
Are you talking about people coming in and liking the look of a nice sort of farm, buying it to live in? Is it those people?
Yes.
And what were they doing? Selling off or renting land? Or what?
Well, usually they'd come in, there'd be the farmhouse and a lot of buildings. And the buildings, very often they got ESA grants to do them up, point them, put new roofs on and what have you. Then they turn them into a house. So instead of being one farmhouse, there'd be, the buildings were all turned into houses, or they extended the houses into them and sold the land off. And, you know, the big businessmen, and we've got one particular businessman in Reno, he owns nearly half the village. He bought all the land as it came up. He bought a lot of the farm, small farms, did the houses and buildings up, sold them off separately and kept the land.
Who were they selling the land to in the early days?
Well,
people like yourselves, little bits.
No, this guy.
Yeah.
He was an industrialist. Well, he still owns it all. He owns half the village. And he employs one man and he ranches it. At lambing time, he'll go round about two or three times a week to look the sheep. What they've done, they've done. You don't start lambing until the 7th of May.
So really, this sort of distorted business of ownership has changed the countryside fundamentally, hasn't it?
You see, all these small holdings, you know, it was a terrific labour force because each small holding had the family there to rebuild the walls, keep the thistles down, catch the moles, keep all the vermin under control. But now they're not there.
You must be immensely relieved that your son is keen farmer, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's so many families where I've spoken to people and they know that they're the very last one and that's it, finished as an enterprise. And yet it can only really function well, can't it, if the whole family's committed.
Yeah. But the finances aren't good. It's only that my wife works and David's partner works. She's got a good job. That's why we're looking after the baby today. Mm. She's an accountant and, you know, that's just what makes it pay.
Yeah. So now you've got far more sheep.
Yeah.
Are they doing all well? You know, all right? Is that, how's
that
going?
Well, over the last 10 years, we've averaged about £8,000 a year profit. That's including about 20-odd thousand pound a year payments from these schemes. Mm-hmm. So in other words, that means we've been making £12,000 a year loss without that.
See, if I go to look to buy a farm, it's something we have done in the past, and we go, you go to the bank, you say, this is my business plan, we've put together. They normally laugh you out of the bank, because you put in the payments that you get, and they look at it and go, we go out of Europe next week, then payments might stop, so you can't pull that in. So you've got no chance.
But when you were a lad, did you always work with your dad right from the start?
Yeah, yeah.
It never occurred to you that you'd want to do anything else?
When I left school in, that mid 2000.
It was around about the time when foot and mouth came for one thing, and there was definitely no money in farming. So there wasn't really enough money to keep David on the farm. So you did a plumbing apprenticeship, didn't you?
Yeah, I went to be a plumber for about 4 or 5 years. Because foot and mouth came, went and come back again. And once we could get a farm to rent of my own, was when I left the plumbing.
Right.
To do what makes you happy in life.
So it was a great relief to you to get back to
yeah.
the thing you really wanted to do all along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And David has rented up land off small parcels of land off up to 12 different landlords. And he doesn't get a single penny subsidies.
Because that all goes to the landlords.
Okay.
That goes to the landlords that they call the active farmers.
David, what's your farming operation now?
We've had mules, and we're just going on to pedigrees. Pedigree Texels and Pedigrees Warbles.
You and Medivision are accredited, aren't you?
Yeah, so all our sheep are health tested as well, which is something we have to do every year. Because we're renting the ground as opposed to here where we own it, just trying to maximise our income as much as we can.
Because you get a sort of premium price for your sheep now, do you? That's
Yeah.
Are
you hoping to in the future?
So again, it's sort of
keeping building up
better
quality all the time.
And they're doing well, are they?
Yeah.
Is it something you've loved doing like your dad did right from when he was a boy? Were you right into it from the beginning?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't particularly think of having pedigrees. I went working away lambing, and I went to a Suffolk pedigree farm in Norfolk, and I don't know, it just kind of took me as something I would like to do, and we're just slowly going toward it. You can't go at it all of a sudden because it costs too much, so we're just building up nice and slowly as we can.
What's your thinking about coming out of Europe?
Well, I thought it'd have been better if we'd stayed in and sorted out the problems that there were. I mean, over the years, all my life, I've argued against the common agricultural policy. It's wrecked farming because more and more now they're saying that these payments have got to go towards ecological things. It's anything but helping farming to be profitable and more productive. It's just paying you to be less intensive, less profitable, and it's definitely propping up all the old farmers. They're using it as a pension. In Switzerland, there's an article in this week's Farmers Guardian, they can't get any payments once you're above 65, because now all the old farmers, I'm 58 and still haven't reached the average age of a farmer yet, all the old farmers are keeping hold of the land and using it as a pension. And it's just wrecked farming and the structure of farming. So over the years, I've argued that it would be better gone and we'd have to stand on our own 2 feet. All the inefficient farmers, all these businessmen that have bought farmland would go out of business next year, straight away, and it would be left to all the young farmers to keep it going. And they'd be efficient and the efficient ones would start making money again.
Do you think that that can happen? Do you think that farming can function without subsidies? Because they're very unclear, aren't they, so far,
well,
Andrew Wilson, about how much subsidy there's going to be, or if there's going to be
any. If they'd have stopped it all over Europe, it'd be the same for everybody. But if the United Kingdom leave Europe and the Europeans keep the subsidies going, we won't have a choice. It'd have to be the same as them. Otherwise, it'd be a very uneven playing field.
So you must be very fearful, with no clear direction from the government about subsidies or payments.
Yeah, well, you've not got a clue what'll happen.
How would you see the future?
It's more fearful now than it was before the referendum, because then we were the same as the rest of Europe. Now, you don't know, we'll be different.
I mean, what are your sort of hopes for the future on this farm? It's a beautiful place, isn't it?
Well, we should be able to keep going as things are at the moment, but it's the unknown with Brexit of what's going to happen. We just don't know. Fear of the unknown.
Do you talk to many other farmers in the area about what we've just been talking about?
Yeah. Well, everybody says exactly the same thing. You won't find a farmer in the area that would disagree with me. These payments, you know, you can't make money without them, but straight away now all the politicians are saying that after Brexit, these things will have to be more pointed in environmental directions. Well, for me, it's going the wrong way. You're trying to make farming less efficient and it won't pay for itself.
If we leave Europe, when we leave, a country has three ways of making money. You grow it, you mine it, you manufacture it. Well, the only one that's left is growing it. And if they're wanting to make that less, then I think the country will fail.
There are the other issues, though, what's always called ecosystem services. But basically, we've got climate change, we've got the carbon lockup in the uplands, and what you're talking about, your operation anyway, is eco-friendly, isn't it?
Yeah.
Most of your operation is entirely sustainable.
Oh, yeah,
therefore, you should be rewarded as such. Mm. So you don't have a problem with that, do you?
No, no.
It's like we need the countryside to do quite a lot of different things, really, don't we? It cannot all be about food production. And where it seems to me that you've maybe got the balance about right on your farm, that's absolutely as sustainable as it can be, but it barely sustains you. That's the problem, isn't it? It barely sustains you.
Yeah.
And that's because of all these problems that you've been describing.
Mm.
But we kind of one size fits all. Don't we need greater knowledge and understanding? It's about space for both things, isn't it, really?
Yes.
About intensive areas that you say, okay, well that's doing that. That's productive. Mm. That's great. That's making money. But the equitable side of that is how farmers are rewarded for their efforts to feed the country. Don't you think that if those are the ways that we should be talking about it, really?
Yeah, but it's a serious problem is that these payments aren't rewarding farmers. These payments are going to the landlords.
There you go. I'm in total agreement with you that the reward should go to the people who produce the work.
Because it's these political buzzwords, they say these payments go to the active farmer. And to be an active farmer, that means you're not an airport, you're not waterways. There's about three criteria. And the rest, if you own land, they say you're the farmer.
So we need a change in the law then.
Well, they changed it about 18 months, 2 years ago, saying it went from being the farmer to being the active farmer.
Well,
no difference whatsoever.
A lot of this, it comes from Europe, but the interpretation of it is down to the government, isn't it? So really, that's one of the injustices that you're talking about, is that if you're a tenant, you're always going to lose out.
Yeah.
So that's one of the key problems around here. I mean, what would you like to see for your future? Obviously, I mean, I guess you're hoping to come back into the farm, you know? But
I just think that farmers need to be valued more. I mean, if you look at France, if the French farmers have a problem and they go protesting to France, say, farmers march on Paris, they do occasionally, as we go to London occasionally, the police almost support the farmers and the public turn out and support the farmers. If we go for a march in London, you get the riot police and the army come after you, clear off home. You're just not supported by the country. So, for me, they just need to value the farmers more.